Well, hello, 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 and welcome to Woodworking is Bullshit, your favorite new podcast about design, inspiration, and the philosophy of design. I'm your host, Paul Jasper, scientist by day, woodworker by night, and I'm joined with my two co-hosts who are gorgeous, talented, and also intelligent. We start with Eric Curtis, who's a professional woodworker by day, professional thirst trap by night, and Mary Sai, who you may know as Premier Mary from her days on stage, AI designer by day, and contemporary furniture maker by night. Ooh, that was a great intro. So today, we may have been drinking prior to this episode. Today, what we are discussing, the question we have centers around boredom, and I will turn it over to Eric.
Well, if we're going to continue the drinking, I'm going to pour myself a little bit of wine here. So this is what I've been thinking about, and I've been thinking about this for a while. And the question that I'll propose to you both first is boredom necessary for creativity? And I think the necessary thing is kind of the linchpin of this question, because I think time and space is definitely necessary for creative thinking. I think giving yourself the ability to kind of block out other voices as you're kind of honing in on your own is a necessary thing in the development. But boredom is a thing that we actively avoid, I think more so in our current culture than ever before. But I've only been around 36 years, so I can't speak to, you know, the 70s, for example. However, I think it's pretty clear that we live now in a society that actively tries to avoid us being bored, because when we're bored, we're not making people money, right? Mm-hmm. And we're constantly overstimulated. We're constantly bombarded with visuals, with sound, with, you know, now like one of the things that I found myself getting irritated with for no particular reason is like the billboards, the electronic billboards on trucks. Like you're driving down the street and it's like a TV on the side of a truck. And I'm like, I don't want to see your active ad. I just want to zone out and drive, because those moments of meandering mentally, I think are really important to the creative process. So for me personally, I'll speak to this from my experiential point of view. When I'm coming up with a design, when I'm trying to come up with a fresh idea, when I'm trying to do something that's interesting and meaningful and not just trying to bang a thing out by a deadline, I'll develop an idea or I'll develop kind of a guiding principle, and then I'll sit with it for a time. And often what I'll do is I'll just go on long walks and I'll leave my phone at home and I will just meander the streets of Philadelphia and see what happens, see where my brain goes. And sometimes it's not productive at all. Sometimes my brain goes off on tangents that have nothing to do with what I need to think about. But I think giving it that space to develop, even if it's on the background, kind of running on like a second window on a processor, allowing it that time to percolate can give it the space to develop into something interesting that's not simply, you know, regurgitation of what you've seen before. And the reason I think I'm bringing this question up now is because I feel like that's where I'm at currently in my creative practice and in my business, is I have so many deadlines and I have so many things going on with running a small business that I don't have currently enough time to sit with ideas and develop them and do interesting things. And so I find myself relying on the same old bag of tricks, you know? Couple of details here, a little bit of texture here, and I know I can pull it off and I know the client's going to be happy with it, but I don't find that same level of creative satisfaction that I get from doing something new, challenging myself and really taking a risk to see if it's going to just blow up. And instead I find myself, you know, making furniture. And there's nothing wrong with making furniture, but that's where I stand right now. And so again, I come back to the question of, is that boredom, is that unstructured play, if you will, of the mind necessary for creative development?
That's a great intro, Eric. You gave your experience about boredom and creativity. So I often, as a scientist, I often try to hit the literature, the scientific literature, to figure out, well, has this been addressed in any sort of structured way? Have any experiments been done? And in fact, a lot of experiments have been done looking at the linkage between boredom and creativity. And for a long time, the conventional wisdom, this is through the early 1900s and 70s and even into the 80s, the conventional wisdom is that boredom's bad in general, right? We think about boredom as a stressed or agitated state, yet at the same time, lethargic. Other people like to describe it as like tiring and miserable and frustrated. And it's been shown to have like negative outcomes in almost every way, like negative outcomes at work in terms of performance, like academically at school, if kids are bored, often their academic performance goes down, or at work, their performance goes down. And in fact, they also sort of looked at safety in the workplace. Like if you're bored, you make a mistake and someone gets hurt. Yeah. So the prevailing wisdom and inertia was always that boredom is a negative trait. And I think all of us relate to that at a human level, right? None of us love it. However, Sandy Mann and Rebecca Cadman in 2014, they were not the only group to test the idea of boredom linking to creativity, but they were, you know, one of the clearest papers that I came across in my limited research on this topic. So Sandy and Rebecca, what they did is they tried to ask the question, does boredom predispose to more creative episodes after? Mm. Okay. And the way they went about testing this is super interesting, right? They took two groups of people, like 90 or so participants in each group. One group had to do a boring ass task, writing phone numbers. All right. Another group had to just read phone numbers. So writing phone numbers, reading phone numbers. And a third group got to not be bored and engage in their favorite, whatever the hell it is, right? And then after a period of boredom or not boredom, those three groups then were asked to do a creative task that could be ranked or and quantified, right? And so the question was, were the people that were bored, did they come up with more interesting creative answers on the creative task that followed? Or not. And it could be measured. The number of creative solutions to that task was quantified, and the creativity of those solutions was quantified somehow. What they found, and I think you know the answer already, everyone, you and everyone probably knows the punchline here. The people that were bored actually came up with more creative solutions and more creative answers than the group that was not bored. And you say, how does that make sense, right? Well, Eric, you already touched on what they think is the link, which is when you're bored, you'd have a tendency to have a free mind. You daydreaming. And while you're daydreaming, the creative answers come up. You ask questions, you ponder solutions. How many of you have come up with an idea in the shower, like a shower thought where you're like, oh, that's it. I mean, it's a perfect example. You're bored as hell. I mean, how many times have you washed your junk, right? So, I mean,
you're bored. How many times have you washed your junk?
Not where I expected us to go, but okay.
So how many times have you washed your body and just been like thinking about something else? So boredom allows daydreaming, which allows creative thinking. Now, the one last piece I want to tell you before we sort of pivot to Mary and her shower habits is, they found that the people who were given a written task of writing phone numbers versus the people that were just reading phone numbers, they had a difference in their ability to come up with creative thinking. Eric, you know it.
If that was the case.
Eric, you know it. Do you want to guess? Go ahead. Go ahead.
Again, purely from experience, I would guess that the writing of the phone numbers is a task that requires some output and therefore limited their ability to come up with creative solutions.
Absolutely. 100% yes. So being occupied, even with the boring task, stole the brain processing power away from daydreaming, which then limited the amount of creativity that the daydreaming could conjure up. That is such a cool experiment. And it's been repeated in other ways by other research groups. I don't want to slight any of them. I just don't have time to cover the entire research literature for a single podcast episode. But I think this is brilliant. It makes perfect sense to me in how I experience boredom and creativity and shower thoughts. And now it's time to ask Mary. Mary, does this framework resonate with you of like boredom, daydreaming, creativity?
Yeah. Well, first off, am I understanding that the more you wash your junk, that correlates with creativity?
Yes,
precisely. Precisely.
So we're really encouraging extreme hygiene.
Eric and my junk is extremely clean.
There's jokes on the table. I'm going to leave them there.
Oh, man. Okay. Jesus. Obviously I agree. I, like Eric, am in a position where I haven't had access to a shop, so I have been dying. And I don't know if that's the same as like boredom of just like really wanting to be in a shop and having access to the ability to make things, but I would define it in a similar way. Like Eric knows that I've been just like bubbling over with too many ideas. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it, like, you should see my iPad. It's literally just so many pages of sketches and sketches and sketches. And that is also what I do when I am in a creative rut. Like, all I do is just make sure the pen hits the paper, the iPad, and I don't even know what I'm going to be drawing. Sometimes it's just like random squiggles and like different shapes, but that helps spur a moment. And for me, that is huge. Like, sketching is always a good way to start that spark. And then also, like Eric, going on walks or just like emptying your mind is another mode for me. However, I'm a bit more specific. I like to go look at things. Like, I think you like to basically zone out, maybe. And mm-hmm. I really like to go look at things that I know I like and I know that are inspiring to me. So it's usually buildings, usually some sort of architecture, some sort of view, et cetera. And that is where I get creativity because, and not always, but I think that for me, historically, that's just been a very consistent way for me to get started. And then there's also times where that doesn't work. And then I don't really know how to handle it. I just keep going back or I try something new. Yeah. But I do know the ways to spark that creativity for me as a, like, this is the most consistent way.
So I think that's an interesting point to bring up. Cause I think on the whole, everything that Paul was saying, I was kind of thinking led into my point of, I think boredom is necessary, right? Because it's the development of the idea. But what you're saying, this is an interesting thing. And this is, maybe it's an input-output question rather than a boredom question. Mm-hmm. But what you're saying is when you're in a creative rut, what you do is go do visual research, right? Yeah. You go to a museum, you go look at buildings, you go do et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And what I do is, like you said, like I tend to zone out and kind of give the idea space to develop. So I wonder if it's more just finding the balance between, like, for example, reading the phone numbers versus writing the phone numbers, because mm-hmm. one is an active task where mm-hmm. you may be searching for inspiration so that you can leapfrog that.
Right. Yeah.
Whereas I may already have the idea and I need to give it space to kind of come to fruition.
Yeah. That
comment. So I view your answers as the same, honestly. So Eric, you don't need that stimuli of like architecture and inspiration to spur your thoughts. Okay, great. You have downtime. Things are happening in the city as you're walking, which is sensory. And then you go back to your thoughts and then sensory and you go back to your thoughts. That's what Mary's doing. She has sensory. Oh, wow. Look at that. Oh, wow. And then she goes back to her thoughts. And then she has another piece of inspiration, another piece of sensory information. And then she processes it, right?
I think that's a very fair point. I think it's the active versus the passive, which is the point I'm trying to make, right?
I think so, you're both active.
Yes. I think
you just may not know
active it. Input versus passive input.
Though. Okay. You know, I get you. Yeah. I feel you.
You're exactly right. And part of the reason that I walk is because like, I know that my body just needs to do a thing so that my mind can concentrate because I'm the type of kid who was doodling in school when I was bored. And I know that as long as my body's moving, my brain can function better. versus what Mary's doing, I think, is actively seeking out input, and I'm actively trying to avoid it, but allowing it in if there's something that catches the eye. And I think that's a important differentiation, because I think it's like when you're a kid in the car staring out the window because it's a long road trip and it's 1991 and we don't have Game Boys or anything like that. And you're just like, cool, I just saw a tree and now I'm daydreaming this like story in my head that is, you know, this monkey in a tree and it's falling, whatever the hell it is.
Would you say it's more like a filter for you? Because I think for me, I try to like take in as much as possible and use and then process that, as opposed to you who already have, like, if you are, you know, taking things in, but you also need some time to just like not process anything so you're filtering like the ideas down.
It's a two-step process for me. So it usually starts with what you're talking about, mm-hmm. which is going and seeking visual research, right? Mm-hmm. It's looking at books, it's going to galleries, it's looking at buildings. Mm-hmm. But then once I do that and I have kind of a guiding star of an idea, then I have to block everything else out because mm-hmm. I need the thing to be able to develop in its own space rather than be kind of bombarded by what I see on social media, what I see on in books or, you know, on the internet. So I think that's the, you know, same church, different pew.
Okay. So what I want to do is like pause for a moment. You know, I want to ask those of you listening, do you tend to go with your own thoughts away? Do you tend to seek out inspiration and then go to your own thoughts? Like, I just want to put a pause here to allow you, the listener, to consider what your own experience is, because one of my pet peeves is how fast podcasts run and how everyone eliminates space, which doesn't give us time to think.
How
bad. So I'm going to give us 10 seconds now to think about what your experience is. Ten seconds feels like 10 minutes, don't it?
I was wondering how many of us were just counting to 10.
But really, you know, I do think having pauses in podcasts and lulls in the conversation does allow processing time, which is boredom, which allows you to chew over what was just said in terms of your own experience. Yeah. So go ahead, Mary.
If you could change what is like causing this boredom now, like, what do you think is the solution for that? Is it just more time to process things and that's the pressure that you're feeling?
The lack of boredom, you mean?
Yeah.
Well, I think what's happening right now in my current situation is I'm running a business as a furniture maker. I'm growing a business as a content creator. And, you know, then there's the teaching and a million other things going on. And so in the... I tend to think that most furniture makers don't make more than about a half dozen pieces a year if you're making studio furniture, right? So if you have 2 months to design and make an object, right? Mm-hmm. And that's not enough time to really, really dive deep into a thing.
Right, yeah.
So you're already limited. And then you have the business aspect of things to make sure that you're maintaining so that you can maintain a life as a furniture maker. Mm-hmm. So what's happening is those things are all happening concurrently and there's not any dedicated time to, you know, say to a client who's been super patient, like, hey, I know I said this thing's going to take 2 months. I think it should take 6 months because I want it to be right. Mm-hmm. Most clients aren't okay with that. Some are. And I've had some wonderful clients who have allowed me to take excessive amounts of time to make a thing. Mm-hmm. But then you have the business aspect of it that says, all right, well, you know, that may take 6 months to make, but they're not going to pay for 6 months. They're paying for 2 months. So
those what's are the solution for you?
The solution for me right now is this is part of the reason why I'm building up the other aspects of my business. So I have the YouTube or the content creation aspect of the business, which I think could kind of simulate the teaching aspect of what I used to have. Mm. And then the objects that I make can be afforded more time because they're not the primary driver of income. And so if I get to a point where I say I'm not doing any commissions and I'm making you know, 2 or 3 pieces a year. Well, now I've got 4 to 6 months a piece. Mm-hmm. And that feels like enough time because it's not, again, this is purely experiential first person stuff. But even if the idea is not the thing you're contending with directly, having time for it to sit in the back of your brain for a few months, knowing that it's coming, is sometimes enough for me to say like, oh, well, that's an interesting thing. Maybe I'll apply it to that thing I'm going to make in 6, 12, 18 months, you know? And I think just that space of being able to sit with it, it's not boredom per se, but it is time, which is a thing that we don't allot very much of in our current, you know, social society.
Yeah, that was my question. Like, what are you defining as boredom here? Is it just allowing yourself to process things through time? Because like boredom indicates like a negative aspect, I guess. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that's necessarily true here. It's more just allowing yourself to have processing time, right?
Yeah, Mary, good point. I think what we need is processing time, whether you label that boredom or not, I guess is up to you. All right, so I want to change topics a little bit because I feel like we've been hammering this.
We were about to really sink the teeth in.
No. I do want to change just gears, but not entirely. So one of the articles I read, when Mortis and Tenon magazine came out in the very beginning, the very first few episodes, I remember reading an article of a production turner or a production maker who makes hundreds and hundreds of units of something in a row, or thousands even. And you would think, oh my God, how boring. But the thesis or the premise of this article was that while that person is doing the repetitive production task, in the midst of that is when the creativity occurs. Mm-hmm. And I was like, wow, I never considered that. I always thought creativity occurred when you're like, kind of thinking off somewhere, not making 1,000 copies of something. And I was like, because I hate production. I hate it. I'm so bored during it. But I thought, golly, that's such an interesting idea. And I have since done some production runs where I make 20, 50, 100 of something. And I did find my brain, while I was doing that task and bored, making 50 copies of something, I did find myself optimizing, rethinking the process, how I could make version 2 better, what would version 3 look like while I was doing it.
So I think that's a fair point. And I think there's kind of two things to say to that. First and foremost, this is why people called Sam Maloof a process artist, right? Like that was his thing. He made the same damn chair for 50 years, but every time he made it ever so slightly different. And he seemed to really enjoy that process of taking a thing that you know 90% of it and seeing the details come alive in the final 10%. Mm-hmm. And I think it's just a thing to note that creativity looks different to everybody. And I think that's fine. But the other thing is, you know, this year with kind of refocusing my business more toward YouTube, I wanted to have some supplemental income. And so I took a job working at a cabinet shop, you know, 1 to 2 days a week. And I don't want to sound arrogant, but it's so easy, man. Like it's just boxes, you know? And I've been doing this for over a decade. Like it's not hard to make cabinets, but it was brilliant because you go in and you do the thing and you don't have to think about it. And so your mind can go elsewhere. You know, I'm building a $50,000 kitchen for these people or doing this giant armoire for these other clients. And I'm thinking about 3 pieces ahead because I have the time and the space to do that. And I think that comes back to my creative process is my body needs to be moving so my mind can be clear. And therefore, my mind can't be super engaged with whatever physical task I'm doing.
Which actually speaks to Mary's counterpoint, which is it really boredom or is it just your mind's free to wander? Yeah.
Well, how are we defining boredom then?
Well, I don't want to get in the semantics of that. Let's not do that. Okay, last question for you. does our phone and technology,
yes, whatever the question yes. is, yes,
just fuck us up.
Yes.
Yeah, 100%.
Right? Mary, you start.
Yeah, absolutely. Are you kidding me? Everything about today's culture is like, one, attention spans are so short. Mm-hmm. Two, you always have to be occupied. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm even guilty of this too, even just reaching for something when I'm like, I don't know, when I'm not having to think of anything. It's just my instinct to open an app or open something to scroll. And the fact that there's like endless scrolling makes it so difficult. As a UX designer, this is a huge, fascinating topic because it is maybe kind of a dark pattern in which you're encouraging negative behaviors, but also you, like, the people want you to consume as much as possible. That's the whole point. It's consumption and it's and like the advertisements and everything. So it doesn't give you the ability to, you know, take time in your brain for yourself. And it also encourages the behavior that even if you do have that, it feels wrong. You become addicted to not having that. It is definitely something that I struggle with. And I'm not even like the young, well, I'm the youngest person here, but I'm not like Gen Z. So it's something that I've noticed over the years. Like, I don't think I was like this before. It's just the, you know, the behaviors of social media and our phones. It's encouraging everyone, even our parents.
Yeah. I think it's been really interesting over the last 5-ish years now to see how I've developed that relationship with my phone. Because, I mean, one, you know, social media was less prevalent 5 years ago, but it was still very prevalent. But I wasn't on any social media, really. I mean, I had a Facebook. But I didn't start utilizing social media as a business tool until 2018. And I've developed this habit over the years of, well, I'm doing it for business. And then all of a sudden, well, now I've got friends on this platform. And now, well, now I'm on 7 different platforms maintaining a business.
OnlyFans.
And it's, well, obviously. You got, listen, I got bills to pay, okay? All right? But it is, it's a thing of, like, this morning, for example, I usually like have a list of things that I need to get done in the day because I have a terrible memory. And I always keep that in the notes app on my phone. And this morning I took out a piece of paper and I wrote it down on a piece of paper specifically so I didn't have to look at my phone, because then you go and you look at your phone and then you're like, oh, well, somebody DM'd me on Instagram. And then you're looking at that for 10 minutes. And you're like, I shouldn't do that. And then I got to look at comments on YouTube, and then I'm on YouTube for 40 minutes. And you just, you keep circling the drain. And you never actually, you know, you never get there. And it just eats away at your time to sit with thoughts and ideas.
Yeah.
So I think for me, I need to be very intentional about taking my time away from that and applying it in different areas.
Great answer. So I am often asked why I don't have a YouTube. And the truth is because I'm on my phone too goddamn much already. If I have to record everything in video and process it and upload it to YouTube, I won't have time to make anything anymore.
Yeah.
It's already too much. I'm not looking for more phone time. In fact, I feel horrible when I'm on my phone all day or for like 2-3 hours at a time. I feel mentally exhausted. Mm-hmm. Just nothing moves me. I feel like tired and like gross, right? And I've learned now that when I go in the shop, sometimes like I know it could benefit people to see how I cut something or do something, like people getting into woodworking. And I understand it would be interesting. It would get me views and get me followers, but I don't fucking care sometimes. I just want that time to feel good for myself, which is like, I just want to make shit and just be happy. It's that simple. And so I put the phone away.
Yeah.
Mary.
Have you guys like ever gone through a period in which you don't look at this, like for an extended period of time? Because I know for like me.
A phone?
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. Or like any sort of consuming of social media or anything. Because for me, like when this was a while ago, but when I lived in Turkey in the middle of nowhere on an archaeological dig, I had no access to Wi-Fi, no reception. And I cannot remember a time where I was happier, which is insane because also it was like 10 years ago and like social media wasn't even that prevalent. But even the state of, you know, internet access and being able to talk with other people, and that, like, just completely cutting that out, it gave me such a better state of mind, such a better, like, clarity, much more creative. I was able to, like, pursue new interests. I took up sketching then, like, walking around, even just taking in all the sights. I don't know. Have you guys gone through a period like that or no?
This is why I started doing the road trips, the big month-long road trips. And I'm, you know, 90% of those days, I spend my evenings out in the middle of nowhere with no reception. And there's nothing to do but, you know, stare at a fire and pour a glass of whiskey and just, like, contemplate life.
Eric, I admire the hell out of you for doing that, really. I find myself wishing I could be there with you when you do that.
Next time, you're coming, buddy.
No, like, really, like, the fact that you have the fortitude to actually do it, it's awesome.
Come hang next time.
We could do a podcast road trip.
We could do a camping pod.
Oh. Guys, we're not going to be sober for that one.
We're not sober for this one, big guy.
Goddamn right, buddy. You know how many fucks I haven't dropped this episode? I'm so proud of myself.
Well, wow. All right. So I guess we're in agreement that the phone is a detriment to our creative process.
I think also.
I mean, you can look up examples of creativity online.
Sure.
Of
course, right? So let's bring it back to the conversation around woodworking, not just mental health and all of those things, which are very well documented, but the creative process and the core of this question about boredom and developing ideas. This is why I talk about the echo chamber of social media, right? Because what happens is, if all you ever do is take inputs and you see people making a thing and you think, oh, that's really cool, I want to go make it, there's nothing wrong with that. But if you want to develop your own vocabulary and do interesting work, and all you ever allow yourself the space to be is bombarded with other people making fucking charcuterie boards with epoxy infills, or like whatever the microwave shock thing was that people were doing for a hot second.
But you're about to say, like, copper ring.
Whatever a copper ring, whatever it is. But like those, you just end up echoing other people rather than developing your own language. And I'm not trying to be an elitist about this. I understand that there are hordes of people who don't have the time or desire to want to actually, like, develop a language. They just want to make things, and that's totally fine. Mm-hmm. But the making of the thing and the developing of an idea are two separate processes. Mm-hmm. And so if you're trying to develop ideas and vocabularies, I don't think you can do that if you're constantly surrounded by, frankly, not very good woodworking on social media apps that are designed to keep you on the app.
Great. Great point, Eric. So I have a question for each of you now that bears on this conversation. I love that last point, by the way. I'm not moving away from it. You know,
lies.
That's great. Anyway.
No. I think he's absolutely right. But we sort of covered elements of one about copying and like generating your own ideas. And basically Eric saying you need the bandwidth to generate your own ideas. When you're in a creative rut, what the hell do you do? And I'm sure there are many people listening who would know exactly what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. You hit that creative rut. You don't feel it. I have no ideas. I'm not feeling like being in the shop. This sucks. I don't feel inspired. God damn it. I want to get back to where I used to feel like excited, titillated about my next project. What do you do?
Mary?
A few different things. I mean, we mentioned the stuff at the beginning of this episode, but for me, a lot of it is sketching, which I've talked about, and just like making sure the pen that hits the paper, like anything. And usually that helps. However, another thing is, especially since moving to Philly, talking to friends. Because I get so in my head and then it just gets worse and worse. It's more just like silence and me being sad that I'm in a creative rut. And I just need to have someone to talk to pull me out of that. And yeah, Eric has been helping with me with that lately because I've just been thinking of far too many things, just overthinking basically. And then he encouraged me, just start making something, just like do anything. Like, I'm the kind of person, unfortunately, who doesn't like to start making things unless I'm like 100% in love with what it is. But I realize that's not always going to be the case for everyone. So that, yeah, talking with friends has been extremely helpful.
I think that's a great point. The reason that I have a shared shop space is exactly that reason, because I think it is immensely valuable, invaluable even, to have second eyeballs on things and just have somebody around that you can, whether it's, you know, through text, give a phone call, or in my case, I like to have people physically there around me while I'm building things that I can just be like, what do you think? Like, am I wrong on this? I don't know where to go on this. What would you do here? And you may or may not take that advice, but having somebody to just poke you and prod you and maybe they say the right thing, I think that's super, super valuable. But the thing that we were talking about the other night, I think is central to this question. As you make more objects, you don't even know what the hell I'm about to say.
No. I don't either.
It's chasing the dragon. Are we chasing the dragon? So, I think about this quite a bit because I know I've made really good objects in the last few years, and yet the enthusiasm that came about from those objects wasn't the same as it was early on. And I think that's just the natural progression of you do the thing. Like, we all are here because we fell in love with woodworking. And it's this incredible medium. It's this beautiful material. Like, we love this thing. And the first time you make an object that's successful, Jesus Christ, that's like having sex for the first time. You're like, what? Like, oh my God. You know, like that's
Eric, it's better than that. Barry, it's way better than sex your first time. The first time you're a nervous fucking wreck.
That's fair. That's fair. And the irony is the time scale is opposite on the two, you know? Like, it's
oh my God.
but it's chasing that dragon of like, am I ever going to be as excited about a piece as I was that first time I made a piece? And it's happened a couple of times, right? Like, the every time I think for me that I discover a new direction, it's kind of that same high. It's this idea of like, holy shit, now I have this entire new path to follow and I don't know where this road ends. But when you're doing a thing and you get proficient at it, then it becomes hard to be as excited about this thing because it's not, you're never wading out beyond the, like, once you can swim, the ocean's the ocean, you know? Yeah. Like, you're never wading out that far.
Yeah. So this reminds me of the concept of flow by, what's his name? Chikai, what's his name?
No, you know that. Chikai, me.
No, you know who I'm talking about, right? Like Chikai Mikan. Yeah. Jesus Christ.
I have no idea what you're trying to say. I just heard sound.
Sorry. The person, do you know this concept of flow?
No.
You haven't heard of the concept of flow by the psychologist?
Chikai Mimi.
I don't think so.
Oh my God, I'm so embarrassed. I forgot his name. Chikai Mikan. Oh my God.
Now keep going, buddy. Keep
I'm
going.
Not familiar. No.
Okay, so I will put his name in the liner notes. I promise. It's a very weird pronunciation. Anyway, it's the concept of flow, and he engineered a framework about how when we enter a new field, we start in, there's like a framework about like when we enter something new, it begins with anxiety and stress because we don't know what we're doing and the difficulty of the task is high. And we're like, oh, Jesus Christ. You're like, what am I going to do? Right. So when you first get into something, it's not exactly like an enjoyable task because you're freaked out. You don't know how to do it. It seems like incredibly difficult. But then as you gain a technical proficiency where the proficiency you have of the task is married to the difficulty of the task, you enter a state of arousal and excitement because you're like, okay, I got this. This is super challenging to me, but I actually am starting to get the skills to address that. And it's damn exciting. It is so, it is like a euphoric feeling when the first time you realize, I got this. Like, I'm starting something new and I got this. I can do this. That is like a euphoria or a high. Like, I mean, man, it is difficult to describe. And I'm sure you both felt it in the shop where you like tried something and you're like, motherfucker, I got this. God, oh, that feels so good. Right. And it's because you're in that state of like heightened arousal. You knew it was difficult, but your skill set has eventually, you know, ballooned up to the task. And then, Eric, based on what you're saying, when you have proficiency, it's not as arousing. It enters a state of like relaxed proficiency. I have this. It's relaxing to do this because I've done it 100 times already. And then it actually can, in some cases, once you've turned 1,000 bowls, it enters a state of boredom. Mm-hmm. So it's a beautiful framework about entering into a new field, anxiety and stress, total arousal and excitement, a flow state where hours go by like minutes. It's truly euphoric. And then you exit into boredom and lethargy eventually once you've done it so many times that it really doesn't excite you. And I think in part that explains why I've tried so many things in the shop. I tried woodworking, I tried pyrography, I've tried leafing, I've tried engraving, because I'm chasing the dragon, as you said.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think this is, it might just be the curse of creative people. Like it's we face boredom, I think, more than most people. I could be wrong. That could be like completely unfounded. But I think we all get to a point where we just find ourselves unengaged, not because the work isn't important, not because it's not going well, but because we're not reaching that flow state because we've maybe not even mastered it, but just become technically proficient, as you said. And I wonder how much this bleeds into the career paths of naturally creative people as well. Because I do wonder about this about myself. Like, am I cursed to be on a 7-year cycle for the rest of my life? Like, I find it takes me around 5 to 7 years to get good at a thing. And, well, it takes me maybe between 2 to 3 years to get good at a thing. And then another 2 to 3 years to enjoy being good at the thing. And then at the end, I'm like, no, I'm ready to move on.
Do you think it's, like, can that kind of euphoria be contagious? Because I wonder, like, when you are teaching or when you do teach and you are around people who kind of discover that feeling in your class.
That's why I love teaching.
Yeah.
Right, Eric? Right? Yeah.
This is, I think about this often because the reason I enjoy teaching beginners classes, and I think this is the same reason I enjoyed coaching preschool gymnastics as opposed to more advanced gymnastics, is the idea of like,
you're just bad at it.
Well, I was just bad at it, you know?
Okay, so I do want to say, I want to correct myself. The pronunciation of the flow state psychologist, Mihai Csikszentmihalyi. I'm not joking. Mihai Csikszentmihalyi. That's how you pronounce his name.
Okay. Nailed it.
Now that I feel like I've done...
Now that I'm the only one that's going to get canceled this episode, we can move on.
Now that I have done justice to the scientists I referred to, finally, we're at 45 minutes now. Finally, I'd like to transition out of our discussion about boredom. I think we have covered it enough, as you can tell. I'd like to move on to, oh my God, I'd like to move on to, what are your goals for 2024?
Why don't you go first, Polly?
I'm gonna have a hard time. Okay. Goals for 2024. Oh my God. Honestly, I want to do better in metal engraving. Metal engraving is something I've been enjoying pursuing. And I think the reason is because it fits into my life quite well. It's like during the day, obviously you're working your job. And then, you know, in the early evening after dinner, you go into the shop and you do some like, you know, heavy lifting and wood is heavy and it gives you splinters and you hurt your hands and whatever. But then like late at night, 9, 10 PM, I'm not quite ready to go to bed, but I certainly don't want to be in the shop. I am just done. I'm just cooked. I don't want to lift heavy shit. I don't want splinters. I don't feel like being cold. So like being in the house, I have my engraving studio is in the basement in my, there's a room in my basement that I set it up. Metal engraving. It's like, you're warm. It's like very technical. You're under a microscope and it's just calm and quiet and you can listen to music and you can be with your thoughts. And it's very meditative. Like we were saying, like, because it like occupies your mind, you can like think about things. I just love it. And I think it's such a great addition to my life for late at night activities, either that or drawing on my iPad. So my goal is to become a better engraver this year.
Nice. Should I go?
Please. Ladies first.
I think one of my goals for 2024, I just moved. So getting back into woodworking after having taken a break for 2 months because I didn't have access to a shop, but just joined a shop. So really excited. But one of my goals, and Eric actually knows this, is I want to do a line of furniture based off of my favorite buildings in Philadelphia. So I often do use architecture as inspiration, but Philly is like my hometown. It's kind of the place that I love. It's the place that I know the buildings the most. Also, I went to school here and studied architecture in college and like was led around the whole city by these professors and professionals and the leads of these architecture firms. So having lived through all that, I want to do a line of furniture, but also in addition to that, and this may be a more multi-year goal, I guess, I want to document better. So I think I want to make a book out of all of that, and that shows kind of my entire process of photographing, of sketching, creating the models, and then the final piece. Honestly, I'm more excited about this first parts than the actual final piece, and then laying out the book itself, because I am a designer. Like, laying things out graphically and visually is really, really pleasing to me and really exciting, and it gets me excited to think about that.
My first tangible goal, I want to clear out my commission queue, and I want to get rid of that because, I want to dive deeper into some pieces that have some more personal meaning, which I haven't had the time to do since the pandemic, since 2020. I've been growing things and I've been growing a business, and that's been very exciting. But I haven't had the opportunity, I think, to set aside a couple of months and just like focus on a piece that I think makes a statement about where I am in my life currently. And that's important to do for me, at least every now and again. So I want to clear out the commission queue and I want to get to making something that forces me to contend with who I am as a human being on a larger scale at this point in time.
That's deep.
What's the first piece do you think you want to do?
I've got ideas.
Okay.
All right. Well, we're at the 49-minute mark. I say we go to everybody's favorite segment. At this point, this is episode 5. Did I say that in the front? I don't know that I did. Actually, now that I think about it, this is episode 5, everyone. And what I do want to say is, you know, since we released this recently, we've had a number of people join our Patreon, which we very much appreciate, because obviously we have to pay fees for hosting and whatnot. And your support is very much appreciated. Someone who I met in person at least 2 times now, he was our first Patreon. He joined at the highest level. Steve, thank you so much. I know I saw you yesterday at the woodworking show, but thank you so much for supporting us. And BV Wynn as well. You joined this week. And all, of course, now this is funny. This is really funny. Our good friend, Keith Johnson, KJ Sawdust, is our third.
My issue with Keith is that he's close friends with all 3 of us. And this motherfucker can't even get out on the top tier bullshitters.
Oh, my God.
Eric, you have the nuts to say that about Keith. Are you a patron of his podcast?
Hey, Keith, I love you, buddy.
Yeah, exactly.
Eric, answer the question. Do you pay per year to support his podcast.
You know how much I pay in emotional support on a monthly basis?
Well, Keith, we love you and we really appreciate you doing that. Like, it's such a touching gesture, even though Eric tries to shit all over. I will not do that.
Patreon on his podcast.
All right, so. Stop kissing ass.
So basically, Mary is nice, and Eric is the only dickhead left.
Just trying to get the best friend card.
Okay. Well, we appreciate both Steve, BB Win, and Keith. Those are our first three patrons. That's what we got at the moment.
Hell yeah.
And hopefully, we continue to get more patrons as you find this podcast interesting and useful to your own creative life. With that, we're going to transition to everyone's favorite segment where we explore the intricacies of the DMs that arrive in Eric's inbox, and it is called The Slide.
The Slide. We're going to slow things down, draw a bath, pour some wine, light some candles, because we're sliding into Eric's DMs. Eggplant emoji.
Oh, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you know what the really fun part is? Is that, of course, we'll discuss this in the after show. And if you're a patron, you get the after show as well as the video feed. I don't even remember recording these messages with my wife. My wife Vicky does the slide intro. She sounds like a total hot vixen. I wish she would use that voice more at home, which I assure you she does not.
Not yet.
Maybe if I was as handsome as Eric, she would, but alas. This message, I don't even remember hearing, so let's let it rip.
Hey, Eric. Off topic, but can you please come over and move some bricks for me in the rain?
In the rain?
So, Eric, that sounds absolutely miserable.
That does not sound great.
Eric, you're moving masonry, heavy objects in the rain.
Now that I think about this, I do remember that this question was from a gentleman, if I recall correctly.
Oh.
The irony to me is that they're asking me to do labor that I definitely did on the show because we moved like patio pavers in a monsoon in Atlanta. So just go back and watch the show again.
It already happened.
It already happened. Come on, man. Yeah,
maybe he wants a personal version of it.
I don't know if I'm doing road calls.
Okay, well, we're going to discuss this more in the after show. We want to thank everyone for tuning in today about our discussion about boredom as it relates to creativity and your phone getting in the way. We hope that you found it useful, and we hope that it made you question your own creative process. As I said, if you think it's valuable, join our Patreon. We'd appreciate that. And until then, we will see you in the after show or next time. Thanks, everyone.
Cheers, friends.